all I ask is, it have asked, is take the vote. I mean, just take the vote. If it loses 3-2 or it loses 4-1, I maintain. I respect that. I have to respect that. It's their government. It's what they see as, if they don't see Baptist as a priority project for the for the county, you know, I would disagree with that personally, but that isn't my decision to make. That's, you know, is their decision to make to support it in the beginning, and it's their decision to make to decide to not support it, if that's what, where it goes.
As Mayor D.C. Reeves yesterday at his press conference, again, asking that the county commission would take up the question of the vote on the funding for the Baptist demolition project. It's not on the agenda. It hasn't been on the agenda. He says he's been talking with Lumen May, and we might get it as an add-on this morning, or I guess add-on today for the agenda tonight for the regular meeting. Joining us now, as he always does on meeting day, Wes Moreno, the Escambia County Administrator. Wes, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. It's great to be here this morning.
Great to have you. Is the Baptist item going to be added? Do you know? I mean, I know you don't make the agenda. You know, I mean, you probably add items. You can talk to the chairman.
I control the agenda somewhat, but as to whether this gets added this morning, I really couldn't tell you. I've had some conversations last night, and I'll have some more this morning. And we'll see where it lands at. You know, there's been several iterations of this, and just quite honestly, we certainly wasn't involved in the front end and the scope of work and some other sharing of information. We've just been asked to get money. So we'll see where it lands at, and we'll go from there.
OLF-8, I haven't heard much about this in a while. In fact, somebody asked me yesterday, and, you know, I said, I literally don't know where we're at. Where are we at?
So the developer has the keys to the gate. They've been going out doing some due diligence. And you know, some layout, some engineering type work, some geotechnical type work, survey type work. So they are working it, and I think we have some meetings next week to kind of meet with them and get a status update from them. But they have got the keys from us, and they have been going out there doing their due diligence. So it is quietly moving along.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, you know, progress is even if it's not out in front of everybody. That's why I wanted to bring it up, because I didn't know the answer, and I was kind of curious about it. This is a personal issue for me of a sort. It's a passionate issue for me, but, as you know, cause you know, I've talked about it and I've talked about it a lot on the show. The retention pond on Sarah, that's just, you know, north of Hancock there, big part of the Monarch Place, improving the drainage there. And I think it's a good project to have a retention pond. The only problem I have is we built another retention pond that used to be a park, and I'm fine with that. It wasn't used all the time. Trees make way for holes in the ground. That's fine. That's fine. But we put the chain link fence up, and it's just so ugly. I have been to Baldwin County. You know, you've heard me talk about this before. I've been to Baldwin County. They managed to do it in a way that they're pretty. They're amenities. They're nice. They do ponds. They do fountains. They do all kinds of stuff. What can I do besides beg, please, let's not put chain link fences around retention ponds anymore?
Well, we have made some efforts, and we've made some progress in doing that.
Oh.
Lumen May is a big proponent of that. You know, making them more walking tracks around them, maybe a little sitting area, park area, or something of that nature. So we have started doing that somewhat. A lot of what determines whether we put a fence around the pond is the slopes of the pond. You know,
sure.
What we call 4-1. If it's 4-1 or less, then it doesn't require a fence. But if it's greater than 4-1, then it's going to require a fence around it just for safety purposes.
And,
but that's the big driving factor.
And, yeah, I mean, and, like, the example I always think of is on Olive Road by the Dreamland Skate. Like, that is one of the coolest park features in the county, frankly. And it's a functional, you know, it's a water pond. Now, it's a wet pond and it's a low slope, but the point is we designed that from the beginning with that in mind, right? And I just think we can do that more often.
Did.
So, okay.
And it was geotechnical workforce, and we can, you know, we certainly move in that direction where we can.
It was just so disheartening when I drove by it, when I saw the fence up. It was so ugly. It's so ugly. On the good news side, actually, hang on for just a second. We'll be back with Wes Moreno in just a second. This is a great news story. You guys are doing a proclamation, or the board is doing a proclamation this morning in celebration of the CORE program, which is the opioid remediation program, where we basically get people who do overdoses, we offer them a chance to take a drug that makes them not want it and not enjoy it. And, oh my God, the success rate is ridiculous, right?
It is fantastic. It really is. It's, and I'll be honest with you, I'm surprised with the success rate. But it is, it's because of a lot of effort and a lot of work that goes into that and a lot of good partnerships. You know, Joey there and EMS, you know, he kind of takes the lead and they make the initial contact and they reach out and they get these folks into the program and meet with them. And when they get to a certain point, they transfer them off to community health, and then community health picks them up and then case manages the rest of the way. And it has just a, been a great partnership and a great program. But the biggest benefit, of course, is for the lives that are changed. And then, of course, for our community. You know, anytime we can make that kind of difference in our community, that is just fantastic. And families that maybe they're getting help they didn't know that was there.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is just case management. But, you know, wanting to reach out, touch these folks. Hey, you didn't call in yesterday. Where you okay? Where you at? What you doing? And it's a lot of work, but it's also a lot of lives change and a lot of benefit to the community. So I'm extremely proud of that program. And we're funding that program through our opioid abatement recovery fund.
Nice.
And that's, so it's not really general fund dollars that are funding that program. Thus, this is the
lawsuit settlement.
The lawsuit settlement money that we're getting from the pharmaceutical companies. So it's been a win-win-win all the way around.
It's not every day that, you know, government employees get to look at something and really, really feel proud of it. This is one of those, my goodness. And I want to put the numbers on this because I think even I didn't know it was this successful. In 2022, before we started this, the overdose death rate in Escambia County was 63 people per 100,000 residents. That's about 200 people a year because we're about 350,000 or so. That was one of the worst in the state. It might have been the worst in the state, but it was one of the worst in the state out of 67 counties. It went from that to it dropped down to last year. It's now 21 per 100,000. The state average is 31. The national average is 31. We went from 63,
right.
We went from about 200 a year to, by my math, you tell me if I'm wrong, by my math, and I hate to say only, but it's only 60 to 70 people dying per year now. That's 130, 140 people's lives saved every year because of this program. I'm not doing the math wrong, am I?
Nope, you're doing exactly right. It's 100, that's the number of lives saved, but you know, you got to look behind those lives that are saved and the difference it makes to the families and to the children of some of these folks and
yeah.
to the spouses of some of these folks and the parents of some of these folks. I mean, it's just such an enormous impact in the community. And it's just been I'll tell you, it's been one of the best programs that we've initiated. That program and I would say the Real Change Project program.
Oh, helping homeless people get home. Yeah.
For us.
Well, and yep. you know, it's I know it's the lives saved and it's the people, but it's also, I mean, the reason we started this originally was to help reduce some of the load on EMS because you have these,
Absolutely.
You know, multiple overdose repeat users that stresses the system. And you know, that's working too. I mean, that's a, you know, 130, 140 people a year that aren't, I mean, just, it's all good. The one thing I didn't know about this, and you may not know either, but how long, my wife asked me last night when I was telling her the story, and I didn't know the answer. How long do people stay on the drug? Is that a lifetime they're on the drug? Is that 5 years? Do you even know?
Honestly, Andrew, I do not know. I'm
okay.
not sure.
Okay, I wasn't sure either.
A lot of that gets handled in the transfer with out of our case management into community health case management. I guess each person is assessed maybe on their own, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I that's kind of what I thought, but I didn't know, so I was going to ask. Legislative priorities. Can I assume that property tax is going to be one of the big legislative priorities this year and figuring out if we're not going to have it, what are we going to have?
Well, it's not on our list, but it's something that we're certainly talking about. You know, the legislature is picking it back up. I know the governor is picking it back up. And so we are having a lot of discussions internally as to how do we plan moving forward. You know, what's the mechanism going to be? What's the transition going to be if it takes place? So it'll be a huge impact to local counties and cities and so forth.
Yeah.
But you know, we're constantly got our ear to the ground and we're looking, talking, and planning.
What is on the list?
So South Navy Boulevard entrance into the base.
Okay, makes sense.
the redesign, redevelopment, and security. One of the biggest things is security. You know, we turn a lot of cars around at that gate. Hundreds a day, it seems like, is what I'm told.
Yeah.
So the base security is a big deal. And then another thing that's not really a monetary thing but a process thing is the removal of derelict vessels.
Yeah.
You know, right now the process is kind of elongated, and so we're going to ask that that process can be shortened somewhat and expedited, that would let us move forward a little bit quicker in removing some of these derelict vessels.
I think you got two on the agenda, right? Aren't there two on the agenda to be removed, I think?
Yeah, yep, they are, absolutely. And when we get funding from SDP or FWC, but it's just a process that it takes to get there, to be able to get these vessels out. And it's a huge problem. You would be surprised how many folks, the more these boats up, remove all the identification, and they just sit there. And I guess it's cheaper than trying to dispose of them or whatever, but they become a nuisance and a hazard. They're in the waterways, and so we want to expedite that a little bit so can we get it out of there.
That makes sense.
Carpenter Creek is there on the list, and that's probably our top three, maybe.
Okay.
And we make, you know,
is that the Headwater project, the park over on the north side of I-10?
Yep.
Is that kind of all that? Okay, which is, I'm a big supporter. I love that project. I did want to ask you, I know you've got the toll, Bob Sykes toll redesign on there. I didn't see any pictures of the intended new version. I know it's not going to be the aesthetic redesign that Ashley Hoffberger had asked for before, and it's kind of been abandoned. The cost is much lower now, but do we even know what's going to go in instead, what it's going to look like? Is that because you and I had kind of talked about alternatives that might involve not even having the overhanging steel structure, lots of possibilities that were in flux. Do we have any better idea what it's going to look like now?
We should have our 100% plans probably in about 3 weeks.
Okay.
So we'll have a great idea of what it's going to look like. And, you know, we're looking at the just the gantry system, not a big overhanging architectural piece, nothing like that, of something that's efficient with some great landscaping around it, aesthetically pleasing sidewalks and things around it coming into it. The biggest improvement I know will be the removal of the toll booth. I mean, just getting that eyesore out of there. And then and we're looking at a couple alternatives, none of them overly expensive or overly eccentric or anything, but you know, you got the water tanks there and the color scheme on the water tanks. So we're looking at maybe if we can match the infrastructure for the gantry to just be coated with somewhat of a similar color.
Just something other than that brushed steel kind of look.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we're looking at that. We'll see how it comes out. But it's definitely a project that's moving forward at a pretty fast rate. Pretty fast pace, if you will.
Well, if we can have anything other than standard F dot rust brown number 6,
I don't disagree there.
I'll take it. Hey, last thing, and I've only got about a minute, but I did want to give you a chance. Obviously, you and I had talked previously about the intermittent FMLA, and this is probably too complex of a topic, but at ECAT, among the regular ECAT drivers, not the new flex drivers, Mike Lowry got up and basically said y'all were totally lying about this, that your numbers are completely not what their numbers are. Have we had any clarity on this? I mean, is there anything you can help me in understanding this? Because, you know, I don't want to deny people the opportunity to deal with their stuff, but I also, you know, I want to feel like I have an accurate perception.
I'll just say this. Intermittent FLA it's a thing that really I don't really care for. It creates more, to me, it creates problems. And I'm not saying there's not some legitimate use of intermittent FMLA, but I can tell you that's not been my experience throughout the years of managing departments and employees and such. But, you know, I don't I get my numbers from HR. I don't get them from going around and asking people questions. So
I gotcha.
We'll just leave it there.
So we're
moving forward.
So the statement that it is widespread and pervasive and is definitely related to some of your staffing issues, you'd still basically, that's still what you believe.
Intermittent FMLA is just tough to manage. And no matter if it's ECAT or Public Works or facilities or what department it is. The intermittent FMLA is just tough to manage. It really is.
And I know you guys are going to talk about Sorrento and the safety audit that you're requesting. And, you know, it's a big agenda, including the cow this morning, the Committee of the Whole with the Animal Welfare Center discussion there. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen today. Wes Moreno, he's the Escambia County Administrator. Wes, I really appreciate you taking some time before the meeting to help our audience understand what their government's doing on their behalf. And we'll look forward to a good meeting today and talk to you next time.
All right. Thank you, Andrew.